New York is now the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, this week, the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator singled out two counties in the New York City suburbs as having the fastest growing number of cases. And now the Rockland County Executive is asking for immediate state assistance. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx on Sunday.
Some of the fastest growing counties are not New York itself, New York City. When you look at it per 100,000, it's Rockland, it's Bergen. So, I mean, these are all of these places are people that have transited through cities.
She refers to Bergen County, New Jersey.
Having Dr. Deborah Birx, the head of the U.S. Coronavirus Task Force, point to our county as having a rate of infection higher than New York City is sobering. I want to assure all of you, as I have said many times before, the rate of case identification is not the rate of infection.
Republican Rockland County Executive Ed Day Monday issued a plea to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Governor Cuomo, we are asking that you help flatten the curve here in Rockland and specifically in the areas that need your help most. I have enjoyed a good relationship with the governor. We've been on the phone with his staff on a regular basis, and we appreciate the assistance. But clearly, after getting national attention here in Rockland, we need the assistance more directly and more purposefully.
A State Department of Health spokesperson pointed to the governor's remarks over the weekend, during which he said current temporary hospital sites are part of his goal of having a 1,000-plus patient overflow facility in each New York City borough, as well as in Westchester, Rockland, Nassau, and Suffolk counties. As of Monday afternoon, the governor's office released statistics showing Rockland with 2,511 positive cases. Rockland County Health Commissioner Dr. Patricia Rupert says the numbers are growing quickly day to day, and the county has seen 18 COVID-19-related deaths so far. She says the majority of deaths were people over the age of 50 with pre-existing conditions. Again, day.
We need our residents to stay home, and we need additional resources and attention from New York State.
He adds,
Governor Cuomo has shown effective leadership throughout the situation, and we now need his help. It is time that aggressive action be taken as we head into the upcoming spring religious holidays of Easter and Passover. We will act in support of whatever decisions the governor and the New York State Department of Health make. But the situation we face here is one of urgency. Make no mistake about that. Rockland was originally included in the governor's plans for temporary hospitals, and we are asking that he revisit the plan as quickly as possible. We are nearing a point where local capacity could soon be overwhelmed. We need definitive action. Possibilities could include Rockland County Community Fieldhouse, as is listed in our emergency plans.
Meantime, Rockland released a COVID-19 map available on the county's website that displays a breakdown of confirmed cases by zip code. The dashboard also breaks down cases by town, with Ramapo harboring more than 63% of the county's cases.
As you can see by the zip code breakdown of the confirmed cases, we have identified the areas where more action must be taken to help flatten that curve. 10952 and 10977 currently have the highest percentages in the county.
Those zip codes are in the Spring Valley and Muncie areas.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
While New York state lawmakers hoped to finish the budget on time this week, they ended up with a conceptual agreement in place, and lawmakers on Thursday, as we record this program, were hashing out the final details. What is clear is that Governor Andrew Cuomo will get broad new powers to add or subtract spending throughout the year as the state continues to cope with the economic fallout from the coronavirus. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo says it's a remarkable achievement that the budget was agreed to at all when he and state lawmakers are under such stress dealing with the steeply rising cases of COVID-19 in the state. The legislature agreed to give the governor special temporary powers to amend the spending plan several times throughout the fiscal year based on how much revenue the state is actually collecting. Cuomo and his budget officials have said the state's deficit could be as high as $15 billion, and they may need to make cuts mid-year to schools, health care providers, and local governments. But Cuomo says if the economy rebounds and there's more revenue coming in, then they might be able to increase aid.
The budget is basically going to say on the numbers, look, we can't spend what we don't have. If money comes in during the course of the year, we'll spend it. If we actually lose money, we have to adjust it. And that's life, and that's every family's situation, and we'll deal with it together.
Money to schools will remain flat in the current spending plan and will match the same amount given to each district last year. Schools have rising fixed costs, though, like pension payments, so they'll likely feel the squeeze. Schools are getting some money from the federal bailout plan. The legislature also authorized the state to borrow money on a short-term basis for the next 3 months. That's because the April 15th tax collections are postponed until July 15th. Advocates had pressed for increasing taxes on the wealthy, but the final spending plan does not include any new taxes on the rich. The governor says, with the exception of the plunging revenue, he believes it will be a robust budget, with many unrelated policy items that the governor proposed in January included in the spending plan.
We did not scale back our efforts or our ambitions to advance this state to greater heights. And you look at this budget, you would never know that anything else was going on.
Those items include a $3 billion Environmental Bond Act, also single-use styrofoam takeout containers from restaurants and fast food outlets will be banned beginning in 2022. Lawmakers were on track to approve a partial rollback of the state's bail reform laws after law enforcement groups said the end to cash bail for nonviolent crimes in New York has led some potential criminals to be set free. Bail reform advocates held a last-minute news conference via Zoom to condemn a plan that would make it easier for judges to order defendants held pre-trial. Marvin Mayfield, who spent 11 months in Rikers Island because he could not meet bail, says the measure would lead to the mass incarceration of another generation of black and brown New Yorkers.
What the governor is proposing will incarcerate an additional tens of thousands of New Yorkers across the state and take away the justice we fought for and won.
The legislature also agreed to create a new crime of domestic terrorism in response to the mass stabbing last December at a Hanukkah celebration at a rabbi's house in Rockland County. One person died and several were badly injured. And lawmakers enacted a controversial publicly financed system for political campaigns that weakens the ability of third parties to become eligible for the ballot. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, well, they didn't quite finish up the budget by Thursday morning, just a day past the April 1st deadline, but they were expected to negotiate the remaining bills.
It's composed of 10 pieces of legislation that contains millions of numbers that could be better viewed as projections rather than solidly grounded. Some lawmakers said they're even cautioning constituents to consider the numbers written in pencil, not ink. You spoke with the governor about all this. There's going to be some serious pain in this budget.
That's right, David. Not only that, because of the work of George Pataki and others, the governor has a right, using the shield of the budget, to do specific pieces of legislation, some of which I'm not very happy about, one of which, of course, has to do with the Working Families Party and making sure it needs maybe an insurmountable number of voters in the last election in order to maintain its line. This is not an attractive part of this governor who has proven himself to be so effective. I don't know what makes him do it, but he does it, and it's not a thing that I admire. In any case, the budget will be done. The legislative leaders obviously have very little time but to do this and sign this. The governor's basically saying, as you just suggested, it is written in pencil. We're going to be going back every quarter, and we're going to be saying these are the adjustments we have to make. And I don't think anybody at this stage of the game thinks that there won't be adjustments, because right now, there is no economy. I mean, the American economy has basically collapsed. There's a $2 trillion crisis amount that has been put in place by the Congress and the president. Nevertheless, it's going to be a while before we make this thing work. We have a president of the United States who said everything would be all right by Easter. Are you kidding? That's not going to happen. And in fact, I think this whole thing is going to make an indelible mark on how Americans congregate for a long time to come.
You know, obviously, there's been this distinction between the state's handling of the coronavirus and the federal government's handling of the coronavirus. But in New York, it's pitted, believe it or not, the governor against New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer. What's up, Alan?
Well, Schumer has come up with, along with the Democrats, with the best deal he could make with the president. And you have a budget and you have an agreement on the virus, basically relief that has been offered. And the president and the Republicans have been, let's take care of our major corporations. Schumer has done a brilliant job of getting the others to come around and say we have to do better by the masses of people who are out there, and we've got to find them some money, we've got to keep them going. The governor's job is to say, okay, I need more for New York State. We need more for New York State. And the package we've come up with for relief is not adequate. Hey, you know, you could drop almost anybody into any of these jobs and say, based on what their responsibilities are, they are going to take a particular line. Schumer knew he had to negotiate with the president. That put him in a spot. And obviously Nancy Pelosi is in that mix also. And the governor has to demand, and has been effective in doing it, more resources for New York State. That may, in the end, put them at some odds.
Well, you talked to the governor about this week, and that's his, well, new panache, new added power because of his high profile and handling of the coronavirus and that impact on getting what he wants out of the other leaders.
Well, that's right. You know, he is a very bright man. He's extremely aggressive. And more people are saying, we wish we had a leader, a national leader in the Democratic Party, who was doing that? Because, you know, you have to be able to stand up to a terrible bully who goes and stands up. I've been watching the nightly appearances of the president on the podium. The reporters are very bright. Instead of asking Trump questions, they're asking the experts. They're asking Fauci. They're asking Bricks. They're asking all of the others what they think, and ignoring the president. He can't stand it. He pushes them out of the way. Well, anyway, it doesn't much matter. What we have now is the state leaders, people like Cuomo, leading the way, and the president taking up the rear and saying, okay, you know, I'll go along with this, or I've been ahead of this all along, and just lies. We're used to it. It's now that the state government, and particularly the New York state government, where the pandemic is residing right now, and it's very forceful leader doing a very good job of saying, okay, the states have to take the lead here.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Charton.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, a new survey finds New Yorkers overwhelmingly approve of how Governor Andrew Cuomo is handling the COVID-19 pandemic. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has the numbers.
A Siena College poll released Monday shows Governor Cuomo's approach to tackling the COVID-19 threat has lifted him in the public eye.
He has his highest favorability rating in more than 7 years since January 2013, prior to passage of the SAFE Act. Right now, 71% of voters view Andrew Cuomo favorably compared to 23 who view him unfavorably. Just last month, it was 44% favorable, 50 unfavorable. He was 6 points underwater. Now he's 48 points on the good side.
Siena spokesman Steve Greenberg says a solid majority of New Yorkers approve of how the third-term Democrat is addressing the pandemic. And when voters were given a series of questions about different individuals and institutions,
to ask them whether they approve of or disapprove of the job each is doing to address the pandemic, Andrew Cuomo finishes by far first. 87% of New Yorkers approve the job that he's doing to address the pandemic, compared to 11% who disapprove.
The poll finds New Yorkers strongly support their local health departments during the crisis.
Strong support as well for Dr. Anthony Fauci from NIH, for your local government leader, for the CDC. More support for the House of Representatives than the Senate, but Vice President Mike Pence, President Donald Trump, finish at the bottom of the list. Only 41% of voters approve of the job that Donald Trump is doing to address the pandemic, while a majority, 56%, disapprove. With Trump, only Republicans approve of the job he's doing. Democrats and independents disapprove. With Cuomo, even 70% of Republicans approve.
Greenberg adds concern among New Yorkers over the possibility of becoming infected with COVID-19 trends high.
Three quarters of New Yorkers are very concerned about the pandemic. 92% say they are concerned. 79% of New Yorkers are concerned that they themselves will get the virus. And as of last week, and these numbers will only grow, but as of last week, nearly one-third of New Yorkers, and far more than that, a bigger percentage downstate, know someone personally who has been infected and tested positive.
The poll also measured responses from voters whose lives have been interrupted by the virus.
Nearly one-quarter of voters say that someone in their household has been laid off. More than half say somebody is working from home in their household, but one quarter of voters, nearly one third in downstate New York, say someone in their house has been laid off because of the pandemic.
As to when the pandemic will end, 53% of New Yorkers believe things will be back to normal sometime soon, while 44% disagree. There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. It's no secret by now that medical supplies are in dangerously short supply as hospitals in the Northeast try to battle the coronavirus pandemic. Engineering students at the University of Albany are trying to pitch in by 3D printing face shields. The Legislative Gazette's Jackie Orchard explains.
That's a Prusa 3D printer, making a face shield for hospital workers. A fine needle point is drawing layer after layer of hot plastic on a flat metal plate. Those layers build up to form the frame into which a UAlbany student will slide a see-through plastic shield. Michael Lazinski, professor of practice at UAlbany's College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity, and Jonathan Muckle, a professor of practice in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at UAlbany, have assembled teams of student engineers to print, assemble, and deliver these shields to healthcare professionals. Lazinski says they dropped off 15 at Albany Medical Center on Monday, which were immediately put into rotation.
And we're looking at scaling our production so that not only Albany Medical Center, but also Rensselaer County first responders and those across the state of New York, as well as the country, we can scale to the production so that we can deliver hundreds of these.
Muckle says the shields are not designed to replace N95 masks, but to be used in conjunction with them to extend their lifespan. The shield will stop saliva spray from getting into the eyes and onto the N95 mask. Depending on the design, one face shield can take up to 2 hours to print and assemble. The UAlbany design takes roughly 40 minutes. Muckle says 24 students and 14 3D printers are working around the clock.
We mobilized a bunch of student volunteers. We kind of rallied equipment and resources together to try to make as big of an impact as we possibly can.
One student leader is Ian Walter, a senior majoring in electrical and computer engineering.
Hi, I'm Jackie. I'm WANC. Should I take my shoes off?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
So here is where the printers are.
Walter was dedicating most of his time to his senior capstone project, developing a satellite to be launched into low Earth orbit. Now he has turned his attention to printing face shields in his parents' living room.
It feels really nice to be able to ideally be
creating stuff and actually helping the medical professionals who are kind of in the front line.
Walter says they are engineers, not medical professionals, so they are relying on approved schematics to make sure they meet hospital standards.
The National Institute of Health, NIH, actually set up a page for 3D printers or makers to submit designs for personal protective equipment, and they'll go through and actually test them and say whether or not it's, you know, this is suitable for like real medical use in the United States.
Walter made 5 prototype masks as of Monday, but now that the design is approved, he expects to print hundreds in the coming weeks. There are now 3 3D printers, all provided by UAlbany, in Walter's home. Walter says he may be one of the first students to print the face shields from home, but he won't be the last.
Hopefully, these won't be the only 3D printers in the process. We'll have more at more people's houses, and have it be kind of a whole community effort of everyone doing whatever we can to help the people who are trying to get us through this very strange time.
Walter says being able to help during a national crisis is why he majored in engineering.
It's a way of thinking, right? A way of problem solving that not necessarily every other field uses. And I love it. And the problem solving that people have been showing with designing these masks and, you know, working together as a community, that's what engineering is all about.
Professors Lisinski and Muckel say with campuses deserted, students feel powerless. Walter worries that someone he loves will get the virus. He says if that happens, engineering the face shields is all he can do.
That's the most direct. Like, I can do something about that to help prevent that situation by making these and getting them into the hands of the people who desperately need them.
UAlbany is donating all protective face shields to Albany Medical Center and is fielding requests from emergency responders as well. More information about how to get involved and pictures of the 3D printing process are at WAMC.org. Reporting from Albany, I'm Jackie Orchard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this week said the state needs thousands of ventilators to meet projections of COVID-19 cases on the rise. With 4,000 from the federal government, that leaves the state searching for thousands more. Meanwhile, Tesla CEO Elon Musk announced that the company's Buffalo factory would begin working on ventilators as soon as possible. But the region's small manufacturers say they can play a greater role than a single large company taking over. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard spoke with Tom Cahill Sr., owner of Melvina Can Machinery, a small company in Queensbury, New York. Cahill says local companies have the know-how and workforce to do it. They just need direction from the top.
We can react much quicker. We don't need to get 20 people in a room and have a big argument about it. We'll just say, do it. That's just the way we're used to doing it with small companies. We can react immediately. We could be making parts tomorrow, given the proper information.
Instead of coming up with a design from scratch, what do you need in order to put things in motion?
My understanding is that there are 5 or 6 designs of ventilators, at least in the United States. We would need the prints from an existing design. And after speaking with anesthesiologists, there's some that have some interesting bells and whistles, but those don't necessarily, any ventilator will keep you alive that's currently sold in the U.S. We need the prints for the most simple one. And those can be sent just instantly, but we need prints. And we could be cutting parts tomorrow, and someone should bring us a working one and a gentleman to help assemble it. But we have the capability to make the parts in this area, and we have the capability to assemble them. We have several manufacturers that make heart implants. I don't have the right name for it, catheters. They would have clean rooms, and they could help assemble it.
In your opinion, would a federal directive, someone from the top, like the president, saying, get on this, manufacture this, this is what you're doing, would that move things along, or do you think things can be done without it?
Well, you might need it, but more importantly than saying do it, it's to who you tell to do it. In other words, I don't believe the larger firms that I've heard bandied about, they simply can't react quick enough. You might get a ventilator out of them in a year. It needs to be an existing design, and somebody needs to say, here, we're going to get you the prints. That's somebody with the power to tell somebody that has the prints, here, give me the prints. That's transmitted to AutoCAD instantly. That's the thing, is to get the prints. Somehow we need somebody with the power to say, get them the prints, get them a unit, get them a guy that will show them how to assemble it. And we have the ability to make the parts and assemble it.
Why do you think it's more advantageous for a design to be sent and prints to come across so you guys can do the work versus inventing or coming up with a newer design for something like a ventilator?
Well, again, we call that reinventing the wheel. If you gave me a part for your car, it's much easier if you give me a print and a part that works. Rather, I could probably design a transmission given enough time and effort, but that's literally an engineer expression of redesigning the wheel. It's just absolutely foolish. Why would you do that when you have working designs? And they may or may not work when we put the time and effort into it. We've got a problem where people are going to die for lack of ventilators, if we can believe what we've been told, and I certainly do. Why would you want somebody try to design something themselves when somebody that's making it can just say, here you go. It should be just, here you go, and when this is all over, don't make any more of them because it's our design. But why would you, if you're going to make a bicycle, you're going to take your Schwinn apart. You're not going to start trying to put seven wheels on or something. Well, it wouldn't be a bicycle, but you get my point.
That's Tom Cahill Sr., owner of Melvina Can Machinery in Queensbury, New York. He spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2014. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.